I don't think that that's the way we usually treat the impact of legislation on pending court cases. I think we usually try to treat it that the legislature is not making a judgment on the validity of a person's claim, but we would be saying win or lose in court that the legislature has given him retroactive relief. So I'd hope it's not clear on the record that this piece of legislation is not intended to make any judgment or to affect in any way the validity of a claim that's being made in the tax court. Representative Jones?
Let me ask a question. Did this gentleman go to the Senate for this same request?
No, he contacted his legislator, his House representative, and then their staff contacted us.
Okay, that's all I want to know. Yeah.
He went through Representative Bunn's office, and so it came. And this bill was already over here at that time.
Representative Clory?
I don't know if this is an answerable question, but is there a reason to make it retroactive other than kind of sentiment for an individual petitioner, so to speak?
No.
Oh, right.
Representative McCarty?
You betcha there's a reason. It's what you call right and wrong.
Oh.
That's a fundamental issue. They should have been paying it in the first place. Now, I agreed with the fellow. That's the whole reason why we've got this retroactive amendment coming up.
Mr. Chair, how long have we been doing this? How long back should we make it then, if that's the case?
It says 83, isn't it?
Go back to 83 so that it covers the field.
Yeah, but my point is, if they've been doing it all along, how far back would we have to go to make it, quote, fair?
I am not sure when.
When was the Department of Revenue created?
That might be an interesting consideration here.
I was that respect. Okay. We don't really have a procedure for that, but we'll go to a vote on the dash 11 amendments, unless there's an objection to voting. Denise, would you call the roll on the dash 11 amendments?
Representative Hanlon?
Aye.
Hugo?
Aye.
Jones?
No.
McCarty?
Aye.
Trahern?
No.
Valori?
No.
Schoon?
Aye.
Hostepak?
Aye. Motion is adopted 5-3, I think. Okay. And what we want to make clear, though, that retroactive window closes on April 15th of 1988, so it's not there forever.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Trahern?
Question on this particular issue, and maybe staff can help me. Is it possible for the Department of Revenue to identify those folks that would fall into this this window so that they could notify them?
They would have to, I guess they'd have to get a list of the people who were notified of a deficiency and who paid and who got a refund. And I'm not sure if they have the capability of doing that or not. I don't see them jumping up and down in the back row there.
I didn't expect they would, Mr. Chair. However, they probably would be able to identify the folks that they have paid interest to, which would indicate that they have gone at least over that four-month period of time.
Well, Jim Brown of Audit Division here is here from the department. He should be able to answer.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Brown, Administrator of the Audit Division for the Department of Revenue. And I think that the major problem that we would have in identifying these people is that we do issue thousands and thousands of refunds off of amended returns that do not involve the issue that you've just dealt with. And the difficulty we would have would be in identifying from our refund record probably less than 10 cases where we had billed the taxpayer, where they had paid and appealed, and then we had subsequently allowed that their claim and issued the refund. From the thousands of refunds that we issue where somebody merely files an amended return, claims that they had overpaid their liability and we agree and we issue the refund. That would be, I believe that would be difficult for us to do that. We may be able to get into those cases that actually were in the appeal stage and actually an opinion and order was issued. We can probably locate those and where there was a refund ordered in the opinion and order. We can probably identify those, but we could perhaps miss one where the taxpayer paid and appealed, and prior to the hearing, we got into some type of a settlement and agreed with the taxpayer.
That would be denied.
Going from our normal refund, it would be almost impossible to identify.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Traherne?
It seems like we're going to make this right. We ought to make it right and notify those taxpayers that have not been paid the correct amount of interest by this legislation, and ask the department notify them so that they know that they have that extra coming.
Is that a motion?
Yes. Conceptual.
Okay, Representative Traherne moves conceptually that we require the department to notify people who would fall into the retroactive window that potentially they're there. Is there further discussion on that from our technical people? Is that doable?
Mr. Chairman, I think that we, as I indicated, I think we could probably identify some of them and notify them. I think there are would be some that we would miss, perhaps.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hugo?
I was suggesting, as that memo is drafted, that it stipulate that our intention is that the department make every reasonable effort so that if the department does, in fact, miss someone, the department would not be held liable by that missed taxpayer.
I consider that to be fair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones?
While the department's here, could they give us an idea of what that's going to cost us?
The search probably costs more than the refund.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, I don't think that we have an exact number count at all. I think in most cases it's going to be pretty small.
Cost to the department to do it?
Oh, for the department
that's
to do
I
it?
That's what I
asked. Oh, I'm sorry. I misinterpreted. I thought you were talking about the
general administrative costs.
I would think the administrative costs would be pretty minimal. I think we could probably
about
deal
$600?
With it. $600? I would assume we could deal with it within our current budget without any problem.
So no subsequent referral to Ways and Means at this. Okay. Is there any objection to the motion in concept? Conceptual motion. If it's adopted and we move Senate Bill 100, then we'll have the language drafted and we'll see if Representative Traherne has any comments on that language before the committee report is submitted, but I don't think we need to bring the bill back to committee. Okay, the amendment is to require the department to make reasonable effort to notify people for whom the retroactive provisions of the Dash 11 amendments would apply. I said that right. Any objection? Okay. Small business stock rollover.
Okay, this is an issue that came up as part of the program that you started last session, which allows qualified small business security purchases that when an individual sells that security, they don't have to recognize the gain and pay tax on it at that point. They can roll it over into a new small business security and only recognize the gain sometime at the end. What this does is adjust the basis for the new small business security that's purchased. And it reduces the basis by the amount of gain on the first one you had, so that when you finally sell this in the end, the amount of gain that you recognize is the total profit you made over the whole time.
Okay. Is this how we do it in other tax situations?
This is the way it's done for residences, right? Yeah. And I'm not sure that we have anything else except residences that we do this for. They're nodding back there. The auditor's back there.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is the way it's done. You adjust the basis of the new stock, and then once they finally sell at the end and not reinvest, then you pick up the gain at that point and tax them on it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones.
For purposes of this amendment, what is our definition of small business?
There is a. It might be carried. Well, no, I guess it's not carried in here.
It isn't in
there. There is a definition that there's a whole section that law that was added in this program, and I don't remember exactly what the definition is, but there's a definition in there, small business. And there's a certification process that the department needs to go through. Jim Brown or Gary Humphrey, they're here, they might be able to. They might know.
That's a good idea. Let's bring Jim Brown up here. And
Gary's pulling through his book.
Gary's looking for his book, I can tell. He's saying, wait a minute, give me time.
Maybe you gentlemen just like to sit there at the witness stand for a while until we're done with Senate Bill 100. Make you honorary members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Gary Humphrey, Policy and Analysis Unit, Department of Revenue. Representative Jones, and what I was stumbling for was in House Bill 2225, we amend the section that defines small business security. Just for all we're doing there is updating a reference to the law that was passed last session. It goes into detail on what qualifies as a small business corporation and therefore would qualify for the small business stock rollover.
Representative Jones?
Well, there's a lot of definitions and various descriptions about small business. Give me the number of employees at this particular reference.
The number of employees that are involved here is that they have no more than 200 employees.
200?
Yeah.
Business.
Thank you.
Representative McCarty or Representative Schoon?
What about sales? Or network?
Let's see. Well, Representative Schoon, it doesn't really go into an amount on sales. It says that the Small Business Corporation had gross receipts, which were not more than 25% were obtained from royalties, rents, dividends, interest, annuities, sales and exchange of property. It doesn't go into a definite amount of what their income can be, I don't think. They can't have issued more than $1 million of stock, small business securities.
Does it also require them to be registered as an Oregon corporation or to do business primarily in the state of Oregon?
Mr. Chair, it does say that it's organized in the state or authorized to transact under the Oregon Business Corporation Act to qualify. And those are the definitions that were put in last session with the bill.
Now, let me be clear on something also here, though. If supposing I invest $1,000 in small business A, sell that stock for $1,500, turn around and invest the $1,500 in small business B, and when I sell that stock, it's worth $1,200, pay taxes on the $200, or do I pay taxes on the $500?
Well, yeah, you're just going to pay on the gain that was...
The cumulative gain,
right,
or loss, because I'm adjusting the basis.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. For federal purposes, you're going to recognize the gain when you sold the first stock.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, you'll just defer that, and then you'll keep accumulating any gain until you finally sell the last stock.
Well, I'm talking about a situation where the second time around I'm losing money. It isn't that I had a gain and then I pay tax on the gain. It's that that second loss is, in essence, offset against the earlier gain.
Yes, Mr. Chair, they would.
Okay. Representative McCarty?
Mr. Jim Brown, how often have you seen this type conversion?
No.
Okay. I don't think I've ever seen
carry this bill.
You've never seen it?
In my position, Representative McCarty, I haven't seen many cases. Gary may have some ideas of the numbers.
Are you asking how many people have claimed this?
How many times have you personally seen, looked at someone doing this?
I don't know of any that have been claimed yet.
I don't know of any either. Now, this is more important now, the fact that we haven't got capital gains. It's possibly, probably a good idea that we go with this. I don't know for who, but it's, small business, and I certainly would support it.
Okay, Representative McCarty moves Dash 13 amendments. The point of the Dash 13, we want to be clear, is not to, is to clean up something that we did last time, which was intended to encourage people to invest in Oregon small business stocks, and this, in a sense, makes it a little less attractive, because under the old law, before we adopt these Dash 13 amendments, people could have carried that sort of off into the future to a point where they never paid taxes on those gains at all.
because they wouldn't have a way of recognizing them at some point in the future. This just says that at some point in the future we're going to pick it up if they use this.
I don't think they could reduce their, you know, their bases below zero anyway, so I don't know, you're not going through it too far, are you?
Okay, is there any objection to dash 13, Representative Calori?
No, I don't object at all. I just, as I pointed out last time, this the original bill had two names on it, Calori and Troop, and I can just tell you in all fairness that the way it evidently got done was not the intent, and this brings it back to the intent.
Good.
Even though I like this better.
Oh. Okay. Any objection to dash 13?
In my fondest dreams.
Mr. Chairman, I just have to support this little helping Ted Calori and, you know, at the expense of somebody else.
This actually doesn't. This one is probably a revenue raiser if there were.
Sure.
Yeah. Anybody taking advantage of this program. Makes a good program. Okay. Okay, the next issue is the military active duty pay exclusion. There were requests for two amendments, one to eliminate the $3,000 active duty pay exclusion, the other to increase the active duty pay exclusion to $5,000. So those are the dash 14 and dash 15 amendments. So they're identical except that they have those two changes. What is the active duty? The active duty pay exclusion applies to people who are Oregon residents on active duty stationed in Oregon?
They could be reserve people in the reserve that go to California to serve a weekend or a couple of weeks down there. So, but they're Oregon residents. And normally we would tax all of their income earned. Normally this would be included in their income. And then we allow a subtraction of $3,000.
Is there any reason why that was put in terms of relationships to other things that happened to their tax treatment of their income, or is it just simply a way of reducing taxes on those people?
I think it's just a way of reducing their taxes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Calori.
I move dash 14.
Okay, Representative Calori moves dash 14, which would eliminate the exclusion for active duty pay.
I just want to express my absolute no on this. Without any
authority, doesn't like dash 14. This comes about as close to an auction as we can have this morning. Why don't we see if there's a vote on 14? Representative Calori, do you want to make the case, or do you think that it's clear what the issue is that we're voting on?
I think it's pretty clear. People can do various kinds of things with their. No, never mind.
Okay. The purpose of the effect of dash 14 would mean that the exclusion for active duty pay would be eliminated, and people who were receiving active duty pay who were Oregon residents paying Oregon income taxes would have their active duty pay treated as ordinary income is treated. Janine, do you want to call the roll on the motion to adopt dash 14?
No.
No.
Cardi?
No.
Trahern?
No.
Calori?
Yes.
Gold?
Hamlin? No.
Spoon?
No.
Hostigan? Aye. Motion fails.
Mr. Chairman, Representative
McCarty?
I would like to know for how long the $3,000 has been in effect. Has staff got any idea when they put that in, or Mr. Humphrey, or Jim Brown?
Probably not that old.
Got any ideas? It's been there ever since I could remember. So.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's been in statute since at least 1969, as far as I can remember.
Yeah. In other words, all things included as far as inflation, etc., $5,000 wouldn't be an unreasonable figure in relation to the original amount. Smile.
Did we pass a bill on the floor the other day that said for tax treatment or for, no, it was for purposes of computing unemployment benefits, reserve pay will not be counted as income. Mm-hmm. Didn't we pass a bill?
No, it will be included. It will not.
Right.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Jones?
I guess at least since 69, is that what I heard you say, that this has been 3,000? I guess I would like to comment on Representative McCarty's discussion regarding the effect of that money today as compared to 69. I think if you were going to do that and rationally to look at that, you'd also have to look at the fact that military pay has changed considerably in relationship to the way in which they're treated. So I think there is a considerable difference in both sides. In terms of the Dash 15 amendments, I'll make it quite clear I would not be ready to increase that. At this point, I think we better let them have what they've got and not try to push it.
Okay, I'm ready to move on to Dash 16.
There you go. So am I, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Dash 16 amendments have to do with the Social Security number on labels. And I think that there was some interest in having this to be sort of a very general reference to different kinds of labels. Did the Dash 16 incorporate that concern that had been expressed earlier on?
Okay, the Dash 16 are written in a way that the department requested, and it has to do with the disclosing their Social Security number or employee identification number to the extent necessary in connection with the processing and mailing of forms. And so it really does have to do with mailing, and I think the department is concerned that they want to keep it narrow to just to deal with this one problem. They don't want to be in the position of disclosing this kind of information other than what's necessary.
Don't mention mailing labels.
Mr. Humphrey, you said...
Mr. Chair, that's correct. That's what the department's intent was, to try and keep it as narrow as possible so that we minimize concerns here on how much we would be disclosing of information. So it would be just in the mailing and the necessary processing if we had to go to a vendor to do the numbers, just to that extent so that we could mail the forms out and use a label with the Social Security number on it.
Mr.
Representative Jones?
Oh, I was just going to move the Dash 16 amendment.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Jones moves Dash 16. Any discussion?
Well, just a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Trahern?
I just want to be real sure that some business couldn't contract the department to mail their forms under this statute or this proposal.
Mr. Chair, Representative Trahern, this would take into account a situation where we contracted with a vendor to produce the...
Yeah.
The labels and mail out the forms, is my understanding. So that they would have, this would allow us, in connection with the processing of the mailing labels or the actual mailing themselves, so the vendor could have access to this, could see the Social Security numbers.
Mr. Chair.
President Trahern?
But it would not allow for you to contract with me to mail my forms using your list. Nor would it allow the vendor to use your list to mail someone else's forms. Is that correct?
Mr. Brown?
I think that's correct. No. Okay. Representative Trahern, I think the purpose would be that we would be limiting the vendor to access to the information only for the purpose of printing and distributing our forms, and not for use in other purposes.
Okay, one more. That's the second half, and that is... There wouldn't be a way that I could bring my form to the department and contract with you to have your labels affixed for mailing.
No, Representative Trahern, we would not. This would not permit that, and we would not do that.
Thank you. Representative Jones?
I was just going to say, in reading this, I hope I'm reading it the same way I think they are, and that it has to be in relationship to the administration of the statutes or any local tax, and not for any other purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is there objection to Dash 16?
Motor vehicles locked.
Okay, so order.
There's some
Number 17. Rick?
This is the interest rate, has to do with the interest rate that the department uses when there's late payment of taxes or when the department makes a refund and is required to pay interest to the taxpayer. It conforms the basic interest rate used by the department to the underpayment interest rate used by the Internal Revenue Service. The Internal Revenue Service actually has two interest rates. One is what they you pay them when you're late in paying, and one which they pay you when they give you a refund. And the one that they pay you is one percentage point less than the one that you pay them. So this hooks up to the underpayment interest. This is the one that's a little bit higher.
I think that's perfectly compatible with the principle that government act like business.
Make a profit.
Everybody has to make a little money.
Business does the same thing.
Buy low, sell high.
Mr. Chairman?
Rick, Representative McCarty?
I thought we were going to connect in concept or something to the IRS.
We are.
That's what this is.
Well, okay.
We're not referencing the IRS. We're using the same numbers that they use. Rick, maybe you could answer that.
Any changes in the IRS would not be automatically adopted then.
That's right. That you can't. Okay. You have a delegation of powers problem here. That in income tax, in the definition of income, you can reference the IRS, the federal definition of taxable income, because there's a constitutional amendment allowing that. But it doesn't extend. It extends just to the definition of income. And this is a question of setting this interest rate. And so this gives the department, the director, authority to change the interest rate that is used in the administration of the tax. And it instructs if you look at page 2 of the amendments, lines 14 through 17, it directs that when they do adjust the rate, that they take into consideration the current interest rates established by the Internal Revenue Service for underpayments arising under federal tax law.
Okay,
Now each quarter, the feds change their rate once a quarter, or potentially could change their rate once each quarter. And in Oregon, the statutes have allowed the director to change the rate once a year, and so once each year they would review the federal rate and then go through the process of adjusting the Oregon rate. So there is a situation where the department will get close to or hit the federal rate, but if the federal rate changes, they're not going to be able to keep up with it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Trahern?
We asked, as I remember, Gary Carlson to work with the department on developing this proposal. He might have a comment if we could ask him.
Mr. Carlson, would you like to comment on the proposal? There's a couple more aspects.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Gary Carlson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. We've worked with Mr. Brown on these amendments, and I think all of our concerns have been met. And we're pleased with the product.
Okay, Rick says there are a couple things that weren't mentioned. One, so we have a rate that is established as 0.75% per month, a fraction thereof. We have a process by which the department can adjust that rate, and the department can take notice of what the federal rate is when they're making that adjustment. What else do we have?
Okay, and then maybe a comment on why it says that it's 0.75%. The current federal rate is 9%, and so this sets it at what the current federal rate is. And then in the last section of the bill is the second tier of the two-tier interest rate structure. What it says is that in section 13 on page 4 of the, see, we're on the dash 17 amendment. Page 4 of the amendment, section 13 there, the paragraph sub 1 says that that if the department fails to make a payment of a refund within 60 days of a tax court or a Supreme Court order, then it will pay interest from that 60th day on at 4% more than the basic rate, which is one-third of a percent per month. Okay, so there's a higher interest rate on that refund if the department fails to pay. And then correspondingly, in the next section, it increases the interest rate by 4% when a deficiency or an assessment payment is not made by the end of the taxpayer's appeal rights. And so the taxpayer continues to appeal, then and eventually loses. During that appeal time, they would pay at the lower interest rate. But once they reach the end of their appeal rights, then they're required to pay. If they fail to pay at that point, then the interest rate goes up. And it goes up by 1/3% per month or 4% a year.
Representative Scone?
What if there's an appeal or there's some other process that may be followed following one of these?
Yeah, normally you have the appeal to the department.
The Supreme Court, I suppose, unless you went to the U.S. Supreme Court.
The
tax court?
Okay, normally the situation of the tax court is that you are required to pay the tax before you go to the tax court unless you get a hardship consideration. So in the normal process, you would go through your appeal rights to the department, and they would turn you down, and at that point you decide you want to go to the tax court, you pay your tax, and then that stops.